Blog Talk Radio.
Never violate the codes of the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep, and I would never testify, cop out for a plea, or surrender information on my boys to the police, and you could never catch me on the block without a strap, and I would never pull it out unless I'm about to black, and I could never forget my homies dying for their scratch, but ever pouring out liquor for them, God to the back, and I would.
Fred Hunter Jr. Chairman Friends in the building, man. Appreciate you coming out to fuck with us. In the building. I see y'all out there, man. I just want y'all to know one motherfucking thing. I would never, ever violate the codes in the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep, and I would.
Hands up, eyes open to fist clip. Face, let me get some of this shit. This should be the chairman checking in. Now, when I say cold of the sea, we talking about the path of cubs. That's like the party cubs, that is. I will never violate the cold of the sea. Will never speak nor serve the interests of our enemies. And if I say that I'm with you, we'll come get you. You best believe that, like bad luggage, we'll never leave. Now, of course, I can never say that I'm never gonna go broke. Because sad to say that we never had this shit rolled. Well, I can never say how it's gonna go. One thing for sure, or two things for certain. They know to shut up motherfuckers like us. They want to kill us. Close up in the casket. Read a quick verse and close the motherfucking curtains.
Never be sad, I would I like a hoe. Never been punk, I'll never let it slide. Never let it go. Never ever, never ever ever. No, get on my level hoe. Or go get a shovel hoe. It's never in question for my manhood. I get down. I'll never switch, never stick, never sit down. I never hesitate to squeeze a nigga six rounds. I never squat to take a piss. Who's the bitch now?
I would never put profit over politics, principle, nor our people. I would never sell my soul. Never put bullshit in the business and never place good upon the evil. You see, why I'm determined to die before being dishonored. Committed to being captured and killed before being capitulated. And that would be perfect and pushing this shit to the motherfucking living. And if need be, pull the motherfucking trigger with a pistol without no hesitating. I will pass the cover to my last breath, to my last goddamn roar. And we'll never forget what them pigs did at 4:35 a.m. in 1969 in Chicago on December the 4th. Never, never, never.
Never ran, never will, I ain't never scared. It's in my bloodline, the realest nigga ever bred. And that's some of the realest shit that I done ever said. And I can die, but through my lyrics, I ain't never dead. I never disrespect my mama, never disrespect her mama neither. I never turn my back on Jesus. I never get caught off in the system, I believe her. Man that follows man ain't a man, and I'm a leader.
I will never cross my comrades and never forsake our fight for freedom. And if you listen to my second verse, let me say it again just in case y'all want to listen. I will never put profit over politics, press with no our people. I will never disrespect the legacy of Minister UEP. Never betray the Black Panther Party. And never bow down and lay down a legacy at the feet of our enemies. Never, never, never. I am a Panther cub by birth and by battle. This is my bloodline and my prison time. And when it be, by wherever enemy, if they try to hijack this legacy, wherever it be, not on our watch. But we'll never, never, never have it. Never, 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 never.
Never gonna turn cold, my nigga. I can never trade. I never cross my homies out. That ain't how I made. And I never had not one regret on how I was raised. I'm from the ghetto where I slung and rapped it every day. Never knew no other way. This thing gon' never change. Never gonna bite my tongue. Fuck what a nigga say. 100 with myself. I swear to God I stay the same. And when I finally got my paper, I was on my game. Never talk a nigga down. Do your thing, dawg. Never hate a dude for trying. That's the same, dawg. Get your motherfucking money. That's the thing, dawg. Too many homies die young. Feel my pain, y'all.
October 23rd, 24th, 2016. All roads lead to Oakland, California. Lonely legacy of Black Panther Party. Protected, respected, and never, never neglected. Never, never.
Ready to roll, brother. Ears up, eyes open, and fist clench. Y'all know this is never do this, y'all. Let's get locked and loaded for another episode of Free of Mark Radio. Let's make history, take history, and take history, y'all. That's what it is, y'all.
You call in numbers is 929-477-3785. Again, also 929-477-3785. Also 708-223-8953. You know what I'm saying? The spirit of, again, making history, taking history, and also taping history. Let's do it and do y'all. As always, we got some hot topics on deck, y'all. Real talk. There's hot topics on deck. That's again, in the spirit of making history, taking history, and taping history, y'all. Weekly program of the Black Panther Party Clubs, hosted by yours truly, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., and also Robin Ali K., the Lady of Rage. We're going to give Revolutionary Road Call salute. I call y'all to tuning in with us, y'all. Again, revolutionary love, respect, and appreciation. For as Mr. Huey P. Newton said, that without the people, revolution is impossible. Again, without the people, revolution is impossible. We got forces coming in from all over the world, not the country, but again, all over the world. Brazil is in the building. You know what I'm saying? No doubt about it. We got the West Coast in the building. You know what I'm saying? We got Chicago in the building. You know, the real talk, East Coast in the building. Again, in the spirit of internationalism. In the spirit of internationalism, y'all, right on. So, again, revolutionary love, respect. Without the people, without the people, revolution is impossible. A few hot topics, hot subjects, dig, you know what I'm saying? I know we want to talk about this case. Somebody, if they can, post me up, give me the sister's case on 79th and Avalon. Again, 79th and Avalon. Six people were shot in the store. For sure, one of the young ladies was murdered, and while the mother was breathing at the hospital, literally at the hospital, the police had, I'm paraphrasing, but our sources have told us exactly what they said to her, that you don't grieve that way. The mother was crying about her daughter, just hearing about her daughter being murdered, and the Chicago police had locked her up. Again, and then we talked to the grandmother. I'm going to see if I can get a call to the grandmother. The grandmother's supposed to be in the studio with us. The grandmother, the police told the grandmother, you keep talking, we'll lock you up. So this is the case again. 79th Avalon, that's the southeast side of Chicago. And, you know, to add insult to injury at the end about this. And to the point that President Superintendent Chicago Police Beck, who's right out of Los Angeles. I'm not sure, don't quote me on this. They posed been not pursuing the charges, but just the deal, you know, so just even to put this in the correct context, correct political context, the fact that again, your daughter just seemed like your daughter being murdered, and then again, they locked the mother up. You know what I'm saying? These type of contradictions we deal with in our community. Also, we're going to be talking about whether they have been references the MillerCoors shooting in Milwaukee. You know, initially when hearing about it, and in fact, a few people had commented on social media, they first heard about it without the picture being shown. I automatically thought it was, you know, it was a white person. So, how do you say, you know, as reference, it's going postal. That, you know, in many cases, when we don't see the face, we say, okay, they're giving a white person time enough to, you know, get suited and booted, wash up, shave. In the picture you see of them, you know, they get the civilian look. They catch our photographs straight, you know, you've been in the police station 3 or 4 days. You get the image they want to pull out there to you. To criminalize you before before you even see a courtroom. But it was actually a brother who had the case, and this is the viewers. If y'all can't even his name, type in his name. I just remember his brother's name. It's a tip. It's in my memory banks. But the deal at the brewing company that we worked at. They by their own accounts, they have documented. It's documented the racial harassment that he has been subjected to, and even had to so what so far as about litigation, and won a case about how, you know what I'm saying, how these employees and his employer dealing with him, you know what I'm saying, the racism at this brewing company in Milwaukee. even it was documented how he found nooses, hang nooses inside his locker. We want to open up the discussion also. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, a lot of times we're talking about racism. People, you know, thought it was, just revert to the, with sticks and stones, will break my bones, and names never hurt me and stuff. But the psychological impact and the question of power, you know what I'm saying? How it impacts you, you know what I'm saying? And let's, again, have a discussion about, you know what I'm saying, this case and just even the deal, the consciousness of race, how it's dealt with, on, you know what I'm saying, not in the classroom, the boardroom, the workplace, the basketball court, the studios, the streets, you name it, you know? We want to talk about that. Also, we're looking for Brother Joseph Chopin to call in. This is a brother who is, for quite some time has been working on a, I don't know if it's a biopic or movie, what the hell we're going to describe it, but a piece in regards to Harold Washington. For those who may not be in the know, Harold Washington was the first black mayor of Chicago, Illinois. Was congressman prior to that, I think also an alderman, you know what I'm saying? And later, some people say he passed away, but we, you know, we cut from the cloth to the position, you know what I'm saying? He was assassinated, you know, we're open to talk about that, but there's a movie that his brother's working on. We expect him to call in, you know what I'm saying? So, know that will be, hopefully, you know what I'm saying, definitely inclusive, but not just Harold Washington in a subjective way, but just the political machinery of Chicago in particular. Many of those who recall that time, remember the infamous Vidoliak War, the city council battles between the mayor of Chicago, Harold Washington, and I think it was the Vidoliak 17, in which these are the aldermen who, the conjugates were heightened to the point where the race line was so drawn, it was blatant. Like, these, anything they had watched the push, you know what I'm saying, the white aldermen, they're not going for it. And there was some, you know, there's always some Negroes online with them, with white aldermen. But also just even during the election, the process, you know, just, I mean, the climate, the historical position of those in Chicago, you know what I'm saying, you know, infamous Marquette Park with Dr. King March, that, you know, this was when Bernard Epton was running against them. You look at some of that foot. I mean, the straight out point blank acknowledgement. Like, people say, no, I'm voting for this guy because he's white. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I recall, I was in grammar school, and even the campaign I watched, and just even how around that time the discussion about electoral politics and other dynamics. This week we're gonna be talking about Chelsea. Y'all feel free to call in. What is, again, either 708-223-8953 or 929-477-35. So, again, press 1 to be heard. I'm going to give a revolutionary call out to y'all. Also, a few announcements, a few PSAs, people service announcements. In the Hampton House, Fish, Barbecue Fish, on deck, moving the group. You know what I'm saying? Putting it out there. You know what I'm saying? Also, we're going to give these construction workers, electricians. We're going to do some drama with that, man. We got to bring the Hampton House up the code. Again, we got to bring up the code. We're going to cover some, major hurdles. Regardless of the campaign, however, the fight is still on. It's still on. Right on. Yes, indeed. Rap with us. Okay, talk to y'all. Feel free to call in. Just tune in. That could be.
Bring him on, brother.
Talk to your input. Bring him on, sister comrade.
Bring him on. We have Brother Chopin on the line, Brother Chairman. Bring him on.
Bring him on.
Hello. Bring him on. Bring him on. Can you hear me?
We hear you, my brother. I hear you.
Brother Chairman, it's good to. Yeah, it's good to hear. It's good to be on the line, man. I'm really, really happy. Was really excited when you invited me, so I appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you calling in with us. For those who may not be familiar with you or your history, the background, can you give us a little background information? Who you are? You know, and, I briefly spoke about what you're working on, but once she's the time with you on here directly, let us know what's going on here.
Yeah, that's not a problem at all, man. So thank you again. So my name is Joseph Chopin, and I'm working on the Harold Washington movie, what is known to be the official Harold Washington movie for Chicago, and it's called The Greatest Good. And this movie is really interesting because, you know, Harold Washington did so much for the city of Chicago, but the story has never been told before. And when we went around and asked people, well, why, how come it's never been told, we got a real big surprise that, you know, Harold Washington's story is powerful. That's the very reason it's too powerful. One of those stories that'll take, you know, it really changes the world, if you know what I mean. So as we approach this great movie and approach this great man's life and to try to depict his story in the right way, the only person that we really could think of to change the world that was the greatest actor to portray him to change the world was Denzel Washington. And, you know, we think that Denzel is going to be a great Harold Washington. We're really excited for him to play the role. We're especially excited now because Denzel is one of those characters that can take one of those actors that can take a character and, you know, really display a true depiction of what that character, that person was, especially in a biopic. So what we're trying to do with Harold Washington's movie is really truly do what the title says and try to do the greatest good. So not only, you know, put a major star role at the helm of the cast, but also do the greatest good by igniting the entire city of Chicago, specifically the black communities in the south and west sides of Chicago, hiring black vendors to work on the movie set. We really want Harold Washington's movie to be 100% black owned. I think that that's that could be. I know that it would be a world of change for our community if we owned Harold Washington's movie and stood up for it and said, you know what, this movie is ours. We're gonna make it the way we want to make it. And like you said, you know, there is some speculation about whether or not he was murdered or whether or not he was, you know, perhaps just had a heart attack. We've had so many different stories, but just think if the wrong person produced the movie and what type of story could come out to the community that, you know, we don't want any watered down version of Harold Washington's story. So we're taking all of our community, bringing all of our community together on the south and the west sides, and we're making sure that Harold Washington's movie gets told properly, the way that the communities would want to see it and the way that they remember Harold. We're not pulling any stops. We're talking about black people beyond black people. When you talk about black people in the movie, you ain't never going to see so many black people in your life in one movie. It's going to be like an international family reunion of black people in Harold Washington's movie. We're going to come together, develop such a emotional and serious product for not only for the movie industry, but for our community to enjoy. And at the end and conclusion, what this would do for community development is the proceeds of the film would be returned back to the underserved communities of Chicago, in the communities, in the black communities that need it the most. We have a lot of drugs in our community, a lot of underserved side streets, abandoned buildings, abandoned homes, blocks that are just kind of don't look so good, but we also want to own them at the same time. It's not that we don't want them to look good. It's not that we don't want them to be developed and put the money behind it. But there's little resources in those areas to develop it, and the people that live in those areas don't have the financing and the funding to develop the blocks the way that they want to see them. And so our goal is to be able to use Harold Washington's funds to reinvest back into those blocks. Put water stores instead of liquor stores in our community, fresh water stores, and try to remove some of the fast food restaurants that are poisoning our people all over our city, south and west sides. And so that's just a little bit of what it is that we'd like to do with the movie. We have just put together a major event at the Harold Washington Library. We had over the whole day, we had over 600 people come, including Beasley Academy, who brought at least like 150 of their 6th, 7th, and 8th graders out to join us, and they were just so impressed and loved the Harold Washington, a mini snippet of the Harold Washington documentary. And we want to keep having these events and keep building up momentum as we move towards the film and just continuing to inspire and pique Denzel Washington's interest as he considers playing the role of Mayor Harold Washington.
Right on. We have Brother Joseph, let me make sure I'm saying this correctly. Joseph Chopin. I'm saying it correctly, my brother?
Chopin, yes, sir. Chopin.
Chopin. Joseph Chopin, who has some years, I can attest to the fact that he's been for years reaching out to people, touching down in the community, trying to reach out, pull this project together. You know what I'm saying? Salute my brother. He's on the ground pushing in regards to this project. At this time, there seems to be some point, you know, some interest again, you know, in regards to the discussion about electoral politics, because I think that there are ebbs and lows in regards to that. But you know, in many cases, they go, you know, there's droughts, and you know, but even if people don't go through active process about voting, but just acknowledging some contradictions, and some can attribute that to, you know, the colorful or lack of colorful campaigns, you know, Trump, and also in regard, you know, the race question itself is being, you know, acknowledged, and the various candidates, regardless of which side of the part of some political fence they may reside on, Democrat or Republican, without the history of these individuals, something that many people, you know, in the past have tried to say, you know, well, this is a post-racial society. Let's not get dirty. Let's not talk about race. Let's not acknowledge the black elephant in the room. In a city that, again, that, you know, so it remains for all practical purposes to be, I mean, the top segregated city in the country. In regard, you know, a city that, you know, that Dr. King himself said that, you know, he had, through Alabama and through places throughout the South, he had never seen nothing to the extent of the contradiction in Chicago. The same city which we've seen with Chairman Fred Hampton, organized, authored the Rainbow Coalition. What, in regard to the machine politics that, you know,
yes,
those who may not, you know, be familiar with that, the infamous daily machine that has been in place even when many people thought it was not in place. What do you attribute that would make, you know, Harold Washington to be first black mayor of, you know, again, in the city of Chicago? And I mentioned earlier about the Vidoliak, Alderman Vidoliak, and the battles that ensued. What do you attribute, you know what I'm saying, to the, was it the climate, the timing, the, you know, like, would
yeah.
this, the question of Harold Washington become a phenomenal question, and that to this day, people still,
yeah.
Engage in discussion?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, for politics in Chicago is probably the core of, the political machine in Chicago is the core of the entire country. So I think that once black people understand that if you don't know politics, if you don't understand politics, if you don't understand or are thinking about the actual word politics, like what politicians do, what the government actually does, and what the movements on the inside of the government, you know, really is, you have to think about when I say that word core, think about what the core of anything is. What's the core of the earth, the core of the sun, the core of the moon, the core of, you know, an atom. The core is the nucleus. It's like the power ball of the whole being, you know, and that's what politics in Chicago is for America. A lot of people think that it would be the Washington, D.C., but really, Chicago politics happens here. Politics happens here in Chicago, where the gangsters are, where the money is, where the working class American is. One thing that when you talk about the political machine and why it was so necessary to happen here. Out of all the cities that came up in America during that time, you had New York City, Atlanta, Chicago, D.C., Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Detroit, Cincinnati, you know, all these other cities, that, New Jersey, all these other cities that are coming up, why was Chicago considered to be the home of the political machine? Because Chicago has the working, Chicago has the working class structure. You know, that's we just adapted it for some, and that's just how fate is. You know, when it comes to, we adopted the working class structure, and it's still like that to this day. When you still look at our communities, they're still segregated. They're still, you know, in New York, there's a conglomerate of people that live all together, and it's somewhat like that in Chicago. But when you, at the end of the day, everybody goes back to their own communities. And so when you think about Daley now and what his agenda was at a time during Chicago, in Chicago politics, when the machine was being created, and he was the he was at the helm of it, you think about what his agenda was. He's thinking, okay, I want to be in this city for the next 20 years. I want to be the mayor for the next 20 years, and I want to have influence not only beyond my agenda, but I want now my son, Richard M. Daley, to I'm going to train him up to be a mayor as well, and to learn how to do things so that my legacy can continue on in the city of Chicago. He wasn't thinking that Harold Washington would ever, or a Harold Washington would ever come and, you know, change the political structure forever. He was just thinking that I need to implant my agenda into the city, and I want to do what I want to do for the city. I want to see it the way that I want to see it. And that's how Daley thought. That's really what he said. I want to show people that I'm the king. I want to show them that this is how it's going to be run, and it's never, I'm going to make such a difference in this city that they'll never know how to run a city ever again besides on the way that I developed and showed that it should be run. So as Daley came up, he now has to think about, okay, what do I need to keep this power that I want going? What do I need to develop and do the things that I want to do? And the only problem with his agenda was that he had 3 or 4 million black people on the South Side that he implemented into his strategy. So you talk about the Chicago political machine. This is the most racist city in the country, without knowing that it's, I mean, you got Mississippi that's racist. But when you think about Chicago, you're not talking about just structural racism. You're talking about financial. And we're a north city. You're talking about political racism. At least in Mississippi, there was a different type of racism. Chicago was more of, I'm going to bite you in the back and kill you type of racism. Mississippi was, I'll bite you in the face and then smile at you and say, go on about your way, like that type of thing, you know, stay in your place type of racism. But Chicago had such a strong and deep sense of racism. So when Daley implemented and invited the black community to come into his machine so that he can keep his votes going so he can realize that power, he wasn't realizing that he was opening up the door to the black political power on a large scale across the country. And this is what this is that core, that nucleus, powerful and more powerful. Yeah, and so when I think about the machine, I think about Daley needing a very powerful nucleus needing black people in order to run. That's really it. And if you duplicate that across the whole country, in New York, in Miami and Atlanta and L.A. and New Jersey, Detroit, you see the exact same thing, just on a smaller scale. They need black people to make this thing work. And his agenda made Harold Washington successful, because where Daley built the Green projects and all the other projects in the city of Chicago, piling up all these black people in one location, when Harold came along, 20-some-odd years later, after he worked for Daly, he was able to go and use those projects as his stomping grounds to collect the same black vote that Daly tried so hard to get. And that's how Harold won almost 98-99% of the black vote in 1983. It's because he used the racism that Daly used against the black people so that he can win for black people. And that's what made Harold Washington so special. Not only did he work for the machine, he worked for the machine against the machine. And you never have seen a politician. We have never seen a politician like that ever since he came and died. There's not one politician who works in the machine and against the machine. If you were to go into a political party today, let's say, for instance, you, brother, or me, I join the Democratic Party, and I'm a Democrat, and I'm a donkey. I'm a Republican. I'm that elephant. You know, I'm a goat. You know, I'm a G. I get up in there and I start voting, and I'm for the political party. I go out and I campaign for the political party, and I throw parties for the political party, and I knock on doors for the political party. And then one day I say, you know what, this political party is doing something that I don't really like. I don't think that they're doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're making the right decision. As soon as I make that decision, that political party today will kick me out. Harold was different. He was able to see that the party was doing something wrong, attack his own political party, and stay within that political party. And that's what made him so special. Because they couldn't kick him out. They couldn't let him go. He knew too much. He worked for the right people. He had the right pull. We were finding out Harold Washington had political power in China, and in South Africa, and in England. You know what I mean? So he was able to pull the support, not only financially but just verbally from his constituents and ambassadors all over the world. So that he can make this happen, and that's what made him so special. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Right on. What are some of the issues that you run into in regards to this? What is sort of the high point? What some, you know, when you felt like you was going to move forward the project, what are some things that motivated as well as motivates you about in regards to the project?
Well, yeah, I mean, Harold Washington created in the city of Chicago a unity for our community. Again, like we've never seen a prodigy like Harold Washington come along since then. We've never seen the community come together in such large numbers since then. For our community. So Harold Washington was interesting. He brought together black people to fight and speak up for the black community. That was different. So Barack Obama brought black people together, but he brought black people together on a unification of for everyone. So it was like a siege of all different nations coming together for him, and black people just happened to be a part of those people that, you know, they came together for this first black president. But Harold, he brought together people for the black community, and that's what created that's what made him so special. So when I think about him, you know, and what he's done, what motivates me is the fact that we can do it again. We can bring together the black community in a major way to own his movie production, to work on his movie production, to be the sound designers, to be the DPs and the cinematographers and the set designers and the, you know, we can take the makeup artists and we can take the food and food trucks of our community and put them on Harold Washington's movie and pay them well. Not only pay them well, but return those proceeds back to them. That's what motivates me the most, is seeing our community come together, that we've never done it before or since then. It's been so long since we've come together in a major way to show the world that we exist, you know, that we can make history if we just show the world that we're here. I think a lot of times black people are overlooked in Chicago and in Atlanta and in New York and across. We are when they think about, when you hear people like Bernie Sanders, and they always say, well, he did good with the black vote, but they don't ever show no black people going at the vote. You know what I mean? They don't show no black people.
Yeah.
They do is we are calculated and advertised as a vote, like the black vote. So we're not collectively coming together for Bernie Sanders, and we're not collectively coming together for Joe Biden or none of those politics. They're just saying it. They're just putting it on the screen saying what percentage of black people came out as per their, you know, their statistics. So when you think about Harold Washington's statistics, when they said the black vote, they meant the black vote. That means we saw them. We saw us coming out. We rallied together. They stopped churches from preaching. If they didn't go out and vote, you couldn't come to church. If they didn't, if they wasn't registered to vote for Harold Washington, you couldn't go. You couldn't keep a doctor's appointment back then. That's how serious it was. So that's what motivates me, is the fact that we can see our community come together in that way again. So with such a project of such importance that it makes us say, if you're not on Harold Washington's movie, you can't be on this line. You can't even talk to me. I don't even want to talk to you. If you're not doing the greatest good, it's like that. That's how serious it is for us, and that's my biggest motivating factor.
Well, on yo, we are live direct Freedom Hall Radio, as well as the intellectual radio. Call us if you have any questions, or someone post up on Facebook Live any questions you may have for our brother. Again, Joseph Chopin is working on the Harold Washington movie. So anything else that y'all might questions, concerns, your thoughts, you know, some ins and outs, feel free to call in with us, y'all. 708-223-8953. Also 929-477-3785, and then press 1. We're making history, taking history, taking history, live and direct, y'all. That's what it is. There's a number of different hot issues that's happening and continue to happen. We are also expecting a phone call from the mother, as well as the grandmother, of the young lady who was shot and murdered store Sunday night in Avalon, and then while the mother was grieving, she came in. Chicago police had made a comment to the effect that this is not how you're supposed to grieve, and locked her up, placed her in jail. So we're expecting a call from her as well as grandmother. Also, we're expecting a call from Milwaukee. What happened with the Miller Coors, the shooting? You know what I'm saying? Again, what's old Ghetto Boy song say? Point of no return. Would push this brother to the point of no return in Milwaukee, y'all. That's what it is. Feel free to call in. Better yet, Cub in. Pat the Cub in with us, y'all. Any more callers in queue? Because we're talking about this the movie, again, on Harold Washington, the first black man in Chicago. So, you know, what's your thoughts? Pass away, assassinated. What's your thoughts? And again, you know, be the diabolical machinery of this infamous Chicago. You know, so how was Harold Washington able to get to the stage in the game the level he was at? Prior to that, Harold Washington was a congressman, correct? My brother?
Yeah, he was a senator and a congressman and the mayor. He was Third Ward Corporation Council. He went from running the Third Ward Corporation Council to get rally votes for Daley Sr., and then he went to be an alderman. And then he was a senator, and then he opted out of being from the Third Ward Council. He stopped that because he didn't like what was going on there with rallying up black people. And then he went to be a congressman, and from there they got him to run for mayor. A cohesive group of people, like a strong group of black people in the city of Chicago rallied Harold Washington to consider running for mayor, and that's how he started to run.
So you got Denzel Washington looking at in regards to acting as one of the, what other potential role you're looking at with Denzel Washington?
Yeah, he called me last year. His team reached out and they said, we want to do this. We hear that it's a great project. Send the script over, and if we like it, then you know Denzel will be the mayor. And so I sent it out immediately, brother. And with that, I waited and waited, and finally I get a phone call from one of his close friends and assistants who called me out and said, Denzel is going to be in New Jersey, and it's a great opportunity for you to come sit with him and see him get, you know, reward, you know, honored with the Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis Award of Excellence
in the building.
Crossroads Theater. Yeah, so he was in the building. We got an opportunity to speak with him and talk with him, and I was there sitting right next to him, and it was really beautiful. I gave him his own Harold Washington button, and original button from the 1980s, and he enjoyed it, brother. And now we're going back and forth.
Harold Washington button.
That's right. Denzel Washington has his own.
Was that the blue background and the white lettering?
That's right. You got it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I gave it to him. The blue with the stripes. The one with the stripes.
Yeah, yeah. What was one of the slogans they had with that? Do you recall one of the slogans? That campaign. I'm trying to recall. I was in elementary school during that time. I'm trying to remember that. March 4th. I can't recall. I'm down to the slogans they had.
Come Alive October 5. To one of the slogans
was
Come Alive. And then you had We Discovered It, We Should Govern It. So if we discovered the city of Chicago, Jean-Baptiste DeSabo, we should govern the city of Chicago. We're talking about Harold Washington. And so that's what I'm saying today. We discovered Chicago, we should govern Chicago. Also another one was We Shall See in 1983. We Shall See in 83. That was, I believe, coined by Lou Palmer in 1982 when he was helping to get Harold Washington to run for mayor. Also, you know, brother, another thing that Harold Washington did for your father, which was really, really good what he did. You see, when Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. was murdered, Harold Washington was working with Renault Robinson on a street team. He was in the Senate at the time. And police shootings and killings of black people was normal in 1960 in Chicago. But it didn't get the notoriety where it became super big until Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. was murdered. I mean, people knew that the murdering was happening, but It was only when Chairman Fred got murdered that people became so like, this is ridiculous, you know. So what Harold did was he put a street team together of black policemen, and Renault Robinson was at the helm of that, and he would have black policemen. Now this was completely against what Daley's police department, the CPD, was doing. Harold made sure that he put together a coalition of black people in the streets to watch and make sure that to watch the black community, so to make sure that if any police officer was going into anybody's house without a warrant or just kind of, that they'd be able to see it and get it on file and either try to stop it or be able to be a witness to it. So they missed Chairman Fred's house that day because they did, of course, you know, with the secret police team that went in there to murder him. Renault Robinson didn't know anything about it. So there was a phone call between Harold and Renault after Chairman Fred was murdered. And Harold said, why weren't y'all out on the streets watching for, you know, police? And Renault Robinson said, we didn't know anything about it. They just went in there and killed him. And so Harold went back into the Senate, and he noted and implemented reform on a full investigation from the Senate, from the State House to the City of Chicago Police Department, of the City of Chicago Police Department. And that made Richard J. Daley Sr. very, very upset. So he said, I want Harold completely out of my sight. This is at the point that Richard J. Daley was done with Harold Washington, when he started an independent investigation of the police department. He thought that he had lost his special son that he saw in Harold from the beginning, when he had him collecting black votes. So Chairman Fred Hampton Sr.'s murder was very important to how Harold Washington fully moved into the black community and started seriously fighting against the machine. It was Chairman Fred Sr.'s murder that pushed Harold away from the machine fully, and that's when he started fighting against the machine. So that's a very essential scene in the movie production. We see how important Harold Washington's life was because of how his life came to be because of Chairman Fred Hampton's murder.
Wow. We say Daley to my Richard. Okay, to my Richard Daley Senior, and was I interchangeably used your the Daley machine or just the machine? So Washington was in the capacity of an alderman under Daley Senior.
Yeah, he was the kind of like a kingmaker. In during that time, he was Harold Washington used to be Richard J. Daley's special guy. If Richard J. Daley wanted more black votes, he would use Harold Washington to go out into the community to get the black vote. And so Harold Washington was like a chess piece for Richard J. Daley.
December 4th, 1969, assassinations. Of Chairman Fred Hampton and Mark Clark.
This was before This was before 19. Yep. This was back in the 1950s and the early 60s. Yes. See, Harold Washington was born in 1922. So he would be 93, 94 years old.
And David, when you just put it in context, I mean, how long the Daley machine has been in place in Chicago, you know, like I think like even Richard J. Daley Senior was a clerk at Cook County when Sam Cooke had got married. You know what I'm saying? So it's just something, you know, put it in the timeline and how long the regime of the Daley machine is, you know, has been in place. And there's even the assassination. Okay, we got Milwaukee just tuned in with us too. So I'm gonna ask you this last question, my brother. That would definitely the direct reflect. You know, the airways are always open for you. We want to keep you updated. I want you to give out the way people can, you know, say donate the support. But let me ask you this real quick too. That after the assassination of Chairman Fred, the Amara Clark, that's when Kearney, the first Republican state's attorney, had came after hanging him. So. I was just drawing a correlation about, like, even how, you know, that December 4th, 1969, how important, I mean, how it shook, you know what I'm saying, the minds, you know what I'm saying, I mean, the whole political machine, you know what I'm saying, in one way or another, the streets, the dynamics, the life and death of Chairman Fred Hampton. I'm saying it as objective as I can. But give us some closing comments and any contact information so you can support the word that was going on in regards to this project.
Yes.
And give us the title again, once again.
Yes, sir. Well, the title of the movie, I really appreciate you for having me on. I appreciate anybody listening. And, you know, you can find the movie at www.thegreatestgoodmovie.com. The movie is called The Greatest Good, and that's thegood.com. Thegreatestgoodmovie.com, rather. And you can find the movie on Instagram. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it anywhere. All you have to do is press in The Greatest Good Movie, and it'll pop right up. All the trailers will pop up. Everything is marketed and labeled The Greatest Good. Or you can go to our Instagram at The Greatest Good Movie. You can go to our Twitter at The Greatest Good Movie. Facebook at The Greatest Good Movie. You can also call our phone line, which is 269-369-6499, and hear any updates directly from me or another person who frequently picks up the phone to give updates on the movie and where we're at. If you want to donate, you can donate to our Cash App, which is at 99 Years Studios. And if you want to know more info about that, just go to www.99yearsstudios.com, and you can find out more on how to donate. You can also email us at 99yearsstudios@gmail.com. So we really just have two web presences, and that's The Greatest Good Movie and 99 Years Studios. That's the company that's producing the movie. I'm Joseph Chopin, I'm the producer and writer of the movie. We have a lot of great people working on the film right now, and we really can't wait to just give Chicago what it wants to see. And that's a movie that is so politically and emotionally exciting that it makes us want to get up and do something great. And I believe that that's what Harold Washington's movie is going to do for our city. So thank you, brother. I appreciate you, and I'm really looking forward to the chairman, the Black Panther movie too, brother. I know it's going to be dope. I've been hearing great things about it, and I hope that we can, have something. Hope we can be a part of it in any way.
Well, definitely keep you updated. But I appreciate you. And in fact, you get back in. Let's link up. You know what I'm saying? So I can update you where that process is at, and we can move forward. Again, brother, in the spirit of making history, taking history, and taping history, these lines are open to you at any time. So please keep us posted. We'll keep you posted. We're going to see how we can connect and make history.
God bless. Oh, thank you so much, man.
You as well. You as well, my brother. We live and direct, y'all. We riding. I know we got a few more minutes. Okay, I'm going to move to the other room. In the meantime, bring Milwaukee on for us. We got an update about this case about Milwaukee, so we're going to go to the other room. So bring Milwaukee in for us. Bring him on in. Bring him on. Give me 2 seconds. Give me Neville.
Come on.
All right, Black, catch you, brother. Give me 2 seconds. Give me Neville with the introduction. Neville. Still making history, taking history. Y'all, we have to move around the studio real quick. But, thing. What's happening? What's going on? Okay, y'all know the rules of the game, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. 2 more minutes on this one, y'all. Yeah, we ride with no seatbelts on. We going coast to coast. We gonna touch down in Milwaukee real quick. What's happening? What's going down in Milwaukee? We hear about this shooting at Miller's Corps. You know what I'm saying? Again, we haven't seen no pictures. I thought it was the right person. You know, but we got forces in Milwaukee right there. Rap with us. What occurred? What's going down? What's the similar, like? This ain't the first time. We last time we had Milwaukee online with us. You know, so we had, you know, cases of police terrorism, you name it, other contradictions. You know what I'm saying? Again, there's a connection. But what occurred? And what's the speed? What's happening at this case where on the workplace we still hearing stories about the brother finding nooses in his locker. I asked about litigation, you know what I'm saying? And they acknowledged, you know what I'm saying, the intense atmosphere he was subjected to. And, you know, a lot of people talk about racism, like, well, just ignore it, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, being a person, you know what I'm saying? But the psychological and physical toll it takes on people. We talk about a quote from a song that they experienced. How much shit can a nigga take, you know? With that being said, where we at? Do we have been walking online with
us? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, my brother. Okay, what's happening? Okay, if you can't tap in with us, what's going on in Milwaukee about this case? You know, what is the community saying about it? About the work, you know, what did the brother work at? Fill us in if you can.
Yes, sir. So this is Brother Vaughn May from Milwaukee. Shout out to Jazzy, Sister Jazzy Blanco, who had me call in. Community activist,
right on.
I called on this show once before, I think a month or so ago.
Yes.
But so this particular incident, of course, we all thought when we heard it was a mass shooting at the Coors plant, of course, we thought this was somebody white, you know, typical white stuff.
Right.
But, you know, I run something called Community Task Force, MKE, and, you know, we do our own investigations. We do our own community work. And so people right away who worked there or who knew the brother right away was like, hey, this ain't what it is. This a brother, and, you know, this been going on at the plant. And, you know, nationally, the president even made a comment right away calling him an evil murderer. Our mayor, a couple other people called him some names. And so when I got that information, other people on social media got that information, we right away tacked it on, like, we hearing something different.
Mm-hmm.
And we stuck to it. And so a week or so later, everything is coming out officially. They're finally admitting that this brother had been harassed, that this brother had been subject to racial discrimination, that this brother had been subject to, you know, racial harassment. And the case that you're talking about, the lawsuit, it was actually he got hurt on the job, and they were trying not to give him workers' comp. And part of them trying to, continue with a narrative that he was just crazy, he just went crazy one day, was they were saying, you know, he was making comments at work that he thought people was messing with him, showing up to his house, following him. But actually, this company had a history of doing that. When you try to file for workers' comp, they hire investigators to watch you to, you know, dispel that claim. And so he did win that lawsuit, but 5 years ago they did find a noose in his locker. That was confirmed. We stayed on that. We stuck to that, and they finally admitted it, I think, today.
Yeah.
Today, I think today was the first time they actually admitted it, or yesterday it might have been. That was 5 years ago. But after the 5 years ago, after that noose, they continued to put stuff in this brother's locker, notes talking about go back to Africa, all this type of stuff. And so for the past, he's been at that company 20-plus years. He was a master electrician. This brother was making big money. And the problem is Coors is a gem of Milwaukee. And they do not
it's
want
to. It's a what? Coors is a what?
It's a gem of Milwaukee. It's one of our, things that we're.
Oh, yes.
What'd you say, bro?
No, excuse me. Go ahead, bro. No, excuse me. No, I was in agreement with you about how Coors is viewed, the Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
The importance of just the bit industry, like, you know, those sitcom, like Before Your Time, the Laverne and Shirley, all that, you know what I'm saying, the whole dynamic about, you know what I'm saying, the breweries in Milwaukee, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, like Cheese of Wisconsin, you know, you can have the slaughter the meat to the slaughter of Chicago. So that the political symbolism, again, the beer and the brewery, no doubt about it, I'm in total agreement. Go ahead, my brother. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's you know, one of the few things we're known for, Laverne and Shirley, Harley Davidson, and, of course,
there you go.
But I call still on line with us.
Fremont, his call dropped here. I'll bring him in when he dials back in.
We call back. Okay. Peace and blessing, love and service. Fremont, I got you, brother. I hear you tuning in with us live and direct, right on. That's what it is, y'all. We send love and respect to all y'all who tuning in with a tie caller call back in, y'all. We hitting the road, y'all. You know what I'm saying? Again, take them seatbelts up and turn the volumes all the way up. You know what I'm saying? We ride. You know what I'm saying? Again, respecting no colonial borders. We got business. Fremont, welcome back. Welcome back.
As well, he hadn't gotten back on, but Chairman, but we do have the sisters from the concentration camp on.
Oh, please. Okay, bring them in.
Okay, Fremont.
Fremont.
Hello, how you doing, Chairman?
Oh, keeping our head up. You know what I'm saying? Again, y'all, this is one of our calls from behind enemy lines. You know what I'm saying? Any update? Always welcome. So, Fremont, what's going on?
So, this is what's going on in Illinois. So, Pritzker, since they want to cut the budget for IDOC, they want to take away the Illinois correctional industry jobs, which is going to save the state $10 million of what money that we're not even seeing, but this is how we survive in our constitution.
You have 1 minute left.
We are. And, of course, I got 1 minute left. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I'll call in next week, but as always, we're going to still try to push that bill for parole for all 32, 33. And 2054.
Yes. Say it one more time so people can know about that.
I'm sorry, I'm running out of time. I'll try to call back next week.
I got you.
Yes.
Right on. We'll be on deck.
Thank you for your time. You too.
Thank you. All those behind me lines, I'm going to say our greetings. We live in the record, Free Them All. We recognize the importance of this venue, this apparatus, Free Them All Radio. Even people got a minute left on the call. They called for the word. We have people, forces, held captives call in from Mississippi. Again, that toll, latest tolls of the 20 or 21 people that have been murdered, you know what I'm saying, in Mississippi prisons, you dig? And we got some updates coming in from NAR next week. And, you know what I'm saying, we got women calling in, giving me updates. Again, we make the connection from the streets to what's happening behind enemy lines. We relate to a minister, E.P. Newton, said that prison is a microcosm of the outside community. We relate to what Malcolm X said, that America itself represents the prison. So, again, y'all, in the spirit of heightening the contradictions, y'all, we live in that record, y'all tell people, you know what I'm saying, basically call in, tune in with us every Wednesday, Free of My Radio. You know what I'm saying? And also, unite with the campaign, One Prison, One Contact. What that means is basically, at any given time, you should have an update on some prospective prisoner, you know what I'm saying? Some who's held captive, their update, if they're in segregation, if they're alive or not. It's one of some of the initial victims in Nazi Germany under Adolf Hitler's tenure was those who did not receive any mail. Deal is prisons are political. Cocaine, crack is political. Coronavirus is political. Movies is political. As we say, everything, we repeat, everything is political, y'all. And we do distinguish. I think it's important that in this day and game, we distinguish electoral politics from politics. Everything is political. That's what it is, y'all. Ever since I see you in the field, right
Chairman.
On for your mom. That's what it is.
Brother Mays is
right,
back
right
on the line, Brother Chairman.
Peace.
We walk you back in the field. Right on. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Appreciate it. We're, I don't even know where it dropped off at.
You was giving us a back. You was giving us a speed regards this brother, the litigation he had filed, the job place, Also, you were giving us a setting of Milwaukee, and you know,
okay.
You know, the whole importance of the brewery industry up there. That'd be a major industry up there. And also, I just like to add too, because the ethnicity that's in control in Milwaukee was German, correct? That's German, right? Am I correct?
Yeah. We were ran by Germans and Jews, Germans, Jews, and Italians. So we did have the mafia here as well.
Okay. It pretty much still is not telling me. It just morphed into different, you know, different dynamic, different euphemisms and terms, you know, so whether it be councilmen or whatever, but they still be existing. What's his brother's name again? I can't remember the brother in Milwaukee. What's his name again?
His name is Anthony Farrell.
Anthony Farrell.
He was 51 years old.
Wow. That's I appreciate you giving us the updates. You know, because a lot of times, you know, we recognize, well, not a lot of times, but the cases, the media is a tentacle. The media is a tentacle of the system, and you know, so even how the lack of representation of the, you know, showing these individuals, just even saying his age, he's 51 years old. It's intentional to have a disconnect from the community. You know, even the case recently in New York, I've got the brother's name. And, you know, just even the fact people that he had a family, so on and so forth. Because, again, it's, we are put forward and presented, or not presented, it's objects of history. So I think it's important that we, you know what I'm saying, we give us backgrounds. So we really appreciate you with that.
Yes, sir.
Phil, say anything else we're missing? Anything up to date? But, you know what I'm saying, what is the – is the community getting the repercussions, reprisal? Because a lot of times, you know what I'm saying, when there are situations, you know what I'm saying, within the black community, the heat comes down, and part of the ongoing breaking process, the entire community is vamped on. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I think about even when O.J. Simpson beat the case, they came through the prisons doing sweeps and locking us down. You know, he's like, "Whoa, where did this come from?" So this is part of the ongoing breaking process. So is there any, you know, fallout that we can see in Milwaukee since this occurred?
So on top of this incident, Milwaukee this year has been designated the site for the National Democratic Convention. So. And later on in the year, all the Democrats will be converging onto Milwaukee. And so, yes, there has been a resurgence of tactical efforts, of indictments, of all type of things going on here to kind of, you know, so-called clean up the community in preparation for that. So this incident fell in a time where they were really trying to crack down on us. But right now, like I said, we got a strong base here, really through social media that we reach a lot of our people in the community and get information to them, contrary to what the media try to put out. So we got a strong social media game, but we definitely have put the spotlight back on Coors, because I don't know if y'all heard me before the line dropped out, but the actual founder of Coors has been found, and this came out today, a statement that he made at a minority business development center in Denver in 1984, where he went to a minority convention for business and said some of the most racist stuff. I don't know what moved him to say this, but of course we already do know. And he made a statement that our ancestors were dragged here in chains against their will. I would urge those of you who feel that way to go back to where your ancestors came from, and you will find out that probably the greatest favor that anybody ever did you was to drag your ancestors over here in chains, and I mean it. He also remarked, Africa's economic problems stem from a lack of intellectual capacity. Coors apologized in a press conference the next day for his unfortunate choice of words and lack of sensitivity, and said he hoped his commitment to minority groups spoke louder than his words. So this came from the founder of Coors Company in 1984.
So you can imagine the climate
Exactly.
In the workplace or the plantation. I mean, yes, indeed. You know, and that's and I think it's imperative that even we have such contradiction that we really seize the time about politicizing it. In other words, not letting the ruling class give us these reactionary responses, like this one just jumped up and snapped out and started shooting at the workplace, or these kids in Chicago just up and killing each other. It's important to put this, again, in political context, what's going on. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we were talking about, you know what I'm saying, the red line and the sharecropping. I tell people, whenever you talk about anything, whatever you talk about drugs in our community, put things in political context. What's going on? You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't tell me partial part of a fight. You just walk in there and just say, you know, man, Mike Tyson just hit dude. You're like, wait a minute, this round eight, did something happen before this? Or, you know, what occurred?
Right.
You know, what's going on? You know, so it's extremely important that we you know, put this in, you know what I'm saying? I mean, who are we talking about? With history, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the from the top down, the climate, you know what I'm saying? And what we never know that occurred, you know what I'm saying? Yes, indeed. So let's see the challenge. In fact, you know what I'm saying? With the world's watching. Let's have a discussion. Let's have a discussion about, you know, again, like the deal is, it's embarrassing being oppressed. It is embarrassing being oppressed. A lot of times we try to jive ourselves about it, you know, engage in these euphemisms and sweep on the world. And it's not just something that's, you know, that occurs in the black community. Many of the prisoners in Abu Ghraib, Baghdad, they were asking, why you didn't tell us about this? Because the prisoners in Abu Ghraib, Baghdad, the prisoners were packed on top of each other, naked with the dog. Those came from the guards. The guards have released those photos. Mm-hmm. Those, you know what I'm saying, their cockiness and, when they asked a lot of prisoners, why you didn't tell us about this? A lot of prisoners was like, we tried to report this. And some of our prisoners said, I was embarrassed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be able to heighten the contradictions and have, you know, have these conversations, and, you know what I'm saying? And, you know what I'm saying, the draw the line, as the minister of UEP News said, the draw the line of demarcation from the criminal as well as the victim. And we don't deal in absolutes. We say that we may be victimized, we'll fight back, you know what I'm saying? Supporting to distinguish the slave from the enslaved, supporting to distinguish, you know what I'm saying, a victim from a fighting back victim. So we want to heighten the contradictions, welcome the conversation, you know what I'm saying, but still put, you know what I'm saying, put it in an objective, correct political context. Again, we know what type of climate, what are we talking about, the history of court, you know what I'm saying, this ain't just, you know, out of a vacuum. So, yeah, we appreciate you for this update. And it's important too. I'll reiterate something you pointed about in regards to the Democratic Convention being, you know, said to be convened there. So we sure that we trying to use this as a, you know, a political football. As we've seen with the case when former U.S. President William Jefferson Clinton, when they ran the Horton, I think it was Willie Horton, from Arkansas. How they use his face, you know what I'm saying, for political punching bag to garner votes, so on and so forth. So I'm sure they'll be trying to, you know, take this case and use it for their own, you know what I'm saying, political purposes. We welcome the struggle. We welcome the contradictions. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, let's have it. Let's talk about the history core. Let's talk about the workplace. Let's talk about, you know, different dynamics. We live and direct, making history, taking history, and also taping history, everything. Again, we repeat, everything is political. Yes, indeed. We wish they love everybody to call in, tune in with us, y'all. Anything else? Anything else?
Yeah. Just one more thing. I wanted to. This is like what you just touched on. What's crazy is because we stood on the situation. When I said the president and the mayor and all these people made these negative comments immediately about him, it got to a point where when we stood on this stuff. The news actually said that they would no longer say his name or show his picture. Like, they refused to even talk about him.
Wow.
And they said they thing was they wanted to focus on the victims. And they went from using a mugshot of him from 20, 30 years ago to now they showing a picture of him in a suit and tie. You know what I'm saying? Like, so they totally had to go back on what they was initially pushing. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, like I said, we're organizing a boycott, and they're going to have to take responsibility, because if they have fired these individuals who did this stuff, they will be alive. So that company is liable for what he did, and for the death of these white people that they parading around as victims now. So, like I said, man, like you said, we got to keep the fight alive. We got to push back, and we can't let them continue to do what they've been doing.
Right on. The breaking process, they don't want us to know about any side of resistance. You know, the deal is that they can't, you know what I'm saying, as Malcolm X said in regards to the March on Washington, they can't stop it. They position it to co-opt it, water down, change it, make it so they have to be. So that's important. We note that. And just you mentioned the boycott. So it's a boycott being implemented in regards to Coors beer?
Yeah, so that's something that we're trying to get started. Of course, it would have to be done nationally. That's a reach that we'll have to work on doing to get our people to not purchase their products. We want to support the people that work there right now and help them through the process of changing that work environment, because I think the brother was making, maybe 5-6 figures, you know what I'm saying? And so it's that company, like I said, it's a gym, and you can make money there, but the conditions that they work in, they getting held in, starting positions for 2 years, you know what I'm saying, while white people can come in 3 months and be hired full on. So there's opportunity that they being blocked from, you know what I'm saying, and all type of stuff. So we want to halt everything that's going on. We want to halt support for their products. We want to halt support until they address this, until they change the conditions, and even the money that they raising. We like, what you raising this money for? If you ain't going to, put that towards
right.
the people that's really suffering, then what we talking about? You know what I'm saying? So we going to need support from our brothers and sisters around the nation, because discrimination in the workplace, I mean, not even talking about Coors. We all know in regular jobs, anywhere you can go, there's discrimination against us. You know what I'm saying? Where we get held back from positions,
yeah.
where we get held back from raises. And we need to start a conversation with one of the biggest corporations that's doing it. Because if Coors is doing it, then we clearly got a case of everybody else doing it. And if we can start with them, then cool.
Yes, indeed. Well, listeners and viewers, y'all heard that loud and clear. So we're going to support that boycott. That's Coors. And I know you can keep us updated. I know that there's subsidiaries or whatever else, that they go pop under their banner. You know what I'm saying? Any call-ins we can do to the corporate offices, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Please get that to us ASAP. Direct us in any social media sites we need to be, so we can stay updated on, whether it be yours or what have you. Can you provide the information for us?
Yes, sir. My Facebook page is Vaughn L. Mays. That's V-A-U-N, middle initial L, last name M-A-Y-E-S. And also you can follow Community Task Force KE. So that's where we pushing all the information relating to this case and all other type of information of work that we're doing and things that we got going on in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Thank you. We appreciate you. Here it up, eyes on the fist clinch, y'all. That's what it is, y'all. It's been making history, taking history, taping history. Y'all tune in with us another episode. They locked and loaded for Free of Mind Radio. So, Conrad, what we got to take us out with?
And Free of Mall, Mr. Jimmy.
Free
of Mall. Indeed. Well, I would say pocket deep, but a little bit of everything they owe.
Yes, indeed.
A little bit of everything they owe. But look, not being selfish. Yes, indeed.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, indeed.
Let me put
23 prisoners in Mississippi. That's the present tally. But as we look forward to bring you online with us, to keep us posted. We just calls also Bernard, those who are here behind the lines and the walls. Y'all keep our heads up, eyes on the fist clinch, y'all. From Mississippi to Bernard, you name it, conference counts all over the world. Let's make that community. One prison, one contact. Everybody should be corresponding with some capital, the capital. That was the call, Free them all.
Imagine if you could go back. Actually talk to the motherfuckers that came. The first motherfucker that came in the slave ship.
Excuse me. We back for everything you owe, no longer oppressed, cause now we overthrow those that place us in this rotten mess. You left the real strategy and pick our enemies. Right. Who stands accused of the abuse, my own kind of right. Caught, not
kindergarten. What you thinking? But you must abandon ship, cause once I rip your whole shit is sinking. Supreme ideology you claim to hold, claiming that we all drug dealers with empty souls. That used to set me to roll, commit to violence in the midst of an act of war. Witnesses left silent, shattered. Black talent style thoughts I throw. It remains in your brain, then of course it grows. Maybe even your babies can produce and rise. Picture a life where black babies can survive past five. But we must have hope. Quoting the reverend from the pulpit, refuse to turn the other cheek. We must defeat the evil culprit. Lace me with words of destruction and I'll explode. But supply me with the will to survive and watch the world grow. This ain't about talking about problems, I bring solution. With the restitution stipulated through the Constitution, you violated, now I'm back to haunt your nights. Listen to the screams of the lives you sacrificed. And in case you don't know, ghetto born black seeds still grow. We coming back for everything you owe.
How do you plead, Mr. Shakur?
How do you plead?
How do I plead?
Yes, sir.
How do you plead?
You know how I plead.
Come on! Not guilty on the grounds of insanity, it was him and me. Busting at my innocent family, say they looking for keys. I was home alone, blind to the prelude. Busting, talking about where is the Quaaludes. What you say, fool? Where in the hell is the search warrant? No feedback is what he uttered. Before he screamed, nigga, motherfucker, drop me to my knees. I proceed to bleed, suffering the rain of blows to my hands and knees. Will I survive as God watching? I grab his hat and bust himself to fit my only option. God damn. Now they got me going to the county jail, and my family can't pay this outrageous bail. Try to offer me a deal, they told me if I swear, move me and my people to a mansion in Brazil, not me. So this is how it ends, no friends. I'll be stressed and they just repossess my bed. Told a judge it was self-defense, he won't listen. So I'm bumping this in federal prison, giving everything.